At Ritual, Mother's Day is kind of a big deal, and we're celebrating accordingly. Find your ritual. If mom needs a bit of stress relief, digestive support, or is looking to support glowy, smooth skin, do it today with 40% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/podcast. That's ritual.com/podcast for 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
History often repeats itself, but when evidence, storylines, and professional opinion all differ, we still don't know the truth. Racism, even now in 2025, is alive and well. But without evidence backing up the claim, can we prove a hate crime?
Throughout human history, there have been stories. Stories that chill us to the bone, leaving us questioning the world around us and remind us that truth is often stranger than fiction. These tales echo through time, whispers of unexplained disappearances, restless spirits, and crimes so baffling they defy logic. Tonight, we peel back the layers of reality to uncover the darkness lurking just beneath the surface. Was it fate, chance, or something far more sinister? Journey with us as we delve into the mysterious, the supernatural, and the true crimes that have haunted our collective consciousness. This is All Things Mysterious, where the shadows hold secrets, and every story is a puzzle waiting to be solved.
A short history lesson before we get into our case. The racial cleansing of Forsyth County, Georgia in 1912. It started with a break-in by a black man into a white woman's home, supposedly with intent to rape. She was asleep, but woke up and he ran. But he was caught several days later along with five accomplices. One man was tried, but the charges were eventually dropped. Racial tension in the county got worse after a black preacher spoke badly about the woman, and white men whipped him until officers could take the preacher to Atlanta for his safety. No one was arrested for the crime, but white men were enraged and began patrolling the streets, calling themselves the Night Watchmen. In September of 1912, an 18-year-old woman was raped and murdered, found the next morning clinging to life, only to die shortly after. Police found a pocket mirror belonging to a 16-year-old boy, tracked it to him, and when he confessed to the crime along with three friends, one of those friends was attacked by a mob within the jail and hung in the town square by the night watchmen themselves. The next day, the other men were found guilty by a fully white jury and hung to death. This led to the night watchmen threatening and forcing all black residents out of Forsyth County, leaving their property and belongings in fear of their lives. Even now, only 4% of Forsyth County is black. Consider this when you hear the remainder of Tamla's story, because Tamla is part of the 4% black population.
I've never heard this case before, honestly, but it doesn't really surprise me any of what you just said. Not really our greatest in history. It always makes me kind of surprised, you know, when people say they want the United States to go back to the old days. Old days weren't exactly that great.
No, they were never all that great. And it cracks me up because people are like, let's go back to when things were so much better. They weren't better. They weren't better at all.
You know, and we've talked about this before. I think a lot of it has to do with the age of communication, because I think a lot of it was, and I'm just trying to give them any kind of benefit of the doubt here, but I think it was just, it wasn't as, you know, we didn't have a connection of as much knowledge as we do now. We didn't really see all the bad stuff that we see now. At least I don't think it was as obvious.
And you'll see that too later in this case. It gets huge in the media because of one particular thing that I'm not going to bring up quite yet, but you'll see exactly how much the media has to play in this. And, you know, back then, even 10, 20 years ago, there wasn't anything like this. There wasn't social media. There was news and, you know, newspapers and stuff, but you didn't have anything like social media, not like it is now, to, you know, spread the word around.
All right. Very much back then, the news very easily was whitewashed, for lack of a better term of it. But, I mean, that's essentially what it was. But, I don't know. I guess looking in, you know, looking back on it, what we know now, I personally would not want to go back to that time. Maybe the no social media, I won't mind that part very much, but only because I'm not really big into social media anyways.
You would say that.
I would. Hell, the only reason I started doing Facebook again was because of the podcast.
It's true. I made you do it.
Yeah, she really did too. And then she's really bad about actually posting.
I have ADHD.
I remind you the day before, and you're like, I set myself a reminder. It's okay.
And then I forget the reminder. It's fine.
Like, it's 6 o'clock right now. Do we want to take bets on if you actually posted that we released an episode today or not?
I didn't.
By now, the episode's been out for 6 hours, so.
It's fine. I was busy.
Say hi to Jordan, our social media coordinator.
I'm so good at this.
Well, I have a feeling this story is going to piss me off, so let's begin.
The actual case we're talking about today takes place, you guessed it, in Forsyth County. Tamla Horsford was a bright, outgoing woman originally from the Caribbean islands. She moved to the U.S. in 1989, eventually moving to Florida, where she met Leander Horsford and got married, falling quickly and happily into the lifestyle of wife and stepmother. Tamla and Leander had another 5 children together, all boys, and Tamla thoroughly enjoyed being a stay-at-home mom. According to her family and friends, she was the life of the party with a huge, fun personality, the kind of person that would never let you down. Which is why on November 3rd, when she was invited to an all-woman adult slumber party that she didn't particularly want to go to, she still said yes and showed up around 8 p.m. with a gift in hand, a bottle of tequila from Mexico. All reports and videos from that night mostly show the same story. Jean, the homeowner and host, didn't like tequila, and most of the remaining women didn't either, so Tamla drank most of the bottle herself. While it was intended to be women only, a couple of the women's significant others ended up staying at the house as well, watching the football game in the basement. Two of the women, Nicole and Sarah, left around 10:30 p.m., The rest of the group played a game of Cards Against Humanity and decided to go to bed around 1 o'clock in the morning, with everyone cleaning up afterward. According to witness statements, Tamla went to have a cigarette before bed, going out onto the second floor balcony before going downstairs to sleep. She was found the next morning, face down, on the grass, dead, still in her pajamas.
So they had a party. And the next morning, she was dead.
Yeah, that's the gist of it.
That's interesting. And I probably missed it. But this is strictly for the audience in case they missed it. What year was this?
You know what? I don't think I even wrote that down. I'm amazing.
Okay, then. It definitely was not just me not listening.
No. Oh, 2018. Okay.
2018. Okay.
So it wasn't all that long ago.
Not too long. Okay. I mean, that's definitely weird. In cases like that, it's obviously usually somebody at the house. There was a large amount of people there, right?
Yeah, they were like 10 to 12 people altogether.
Yeah, so very unlikely that somebody else outside came in. But I don't know. I mean, not a lot to go on right now. I assume, based on the intro part, that it's going to get way worse.
Maybe not.
I know you, Jordan. We'll see where it goes. But right now, I mean, it's suspicious. I assume at some point we'll talk about her cause of death.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Not right now. I mean, suspicious. Probably somebody in the house is involved. or multiple people. But we'll see what I feel like at the end.
So on the morning she was discovered, one of the party guests, Madeline Lombardi, woke up and went to check the temperature outside around 8:30 and discovered Tamla. She was face down, not moving on the lawn. She didn't know what to do, so she went to notify Jose and Jean, the homeowners. Jose then went to check on Tamla himself and called 911, telling them she wasn't breathing. When emergency services arrived and pronounced Tamla dead around 9 o'clock that morning, detectives immediately took statements and began making their own theories. Tamla, of course, was face down on the grass in her pajamas and socks. Her right hand was by her side and her left hand was at an angle, still kind of at her side. When she was autopsied, it was discovered she had a displaced wrist, many superficial scrapes to her face, as well as hematomas to her skull, and a spinal fracture. She had a blood alcohol content of 0.238, THC in her blood, as well as Xanax. Her cause of death was blunt force trauma. The medical examiner concluded this was an accidental death. Detectives, even though they were treating Jean's house like a crime scene, concluded this was also an accidental death. But Tamla's friends and family were not convinced because they knew in their heart this was homicide.
So the medical examiner called it an accidental death?
Yep.
That's a little weird to me because some of those injuries, maybe. The wrist one, though, that's... You said it was a spiral fracture?
No, she had a spinal fracture.
Oh, what'd you say about the wrist, though?
Dislocated.
Oh. I don't think a fall could really do that. That seems like more someone pulling on the wrist. But I don't know.
To me, a fall, I mean, the scrapes and stuff, that would make sense. Especially if you were pretty drunk. That part, that makes sense to me. Especially because she did fall like face first if she fell. And that part, that would make sense. You know, your face is going into the grass and I'm assuming it's probably a little bit rocky. I get that. To me, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Even a little bit your wrist, if you like brace yourself with the fall, and if you're drunk, you're not bracing it, you know, in a way that's going to make a lot of sense. You're not reacting the right way. But maybe. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
I mean, I would suspect, which I could be totally wrong. We've talked about it before. I am not a doctor. But it just seems like if someone fell on their wrist, because I have fell on my wrist, and I actually did break my wrist from falling. So it just seems like if you're going to fall on your wrist, you would break it or even sprain it, but not dislocate. Dislocating, I mean, to me, is more like somebody like grabbing the hand or wrist and pulling. Or after she's dead, moving the body, pulling on the wrist, maybe, but I don't know. It doesn't seem like it was a fall. And maybe he just kind of ignored that part and kind of looked at everything else as a whole and decided, I don't know. But it just definitely suspicious. Yeah, definitely suspicious.
The whole thing is just, it's just really weird. And I would also like to preface this by saying she was the only Black woman at the party.
Was she single?
No, she's married.
So her husband was there?
No. Oh. It was supposed to be like an all-woman sleepover. Basically, it was just a bunch of like football moms. Her son and a bunch of the other woman's sons were like on a football team together, which is how they knew each other for the most part. And they were like, hey, it was one of the other mom's birthdays. And they got together. They were like, hey, let's not go out. Let's just have a night in, have like a little birthday celebration. We can just stay in. We can drink. We can have fun. Honestly, it sounds like a good night to me.
Kind of weird for adults to have a sleepover, though.
The idea was so that they could drink and they wouldn't have to drive home.
Yeah, I get it, but I don't know. There's definitely a lot of weirdness to this so far. but not super weird yet, if that makes sense. Not like, I think it's not weird enough necessarily for us to cover at this point, which means it's definitely going to get worse. Jordan doesn't like doing stories that don't get super weird or make me angry. That's her other go-to, but since there's no child involved yet, then we're going with the super weird part, I guess.
Maybe. You'll see.
Unless you're going to change it up and, like, at the end, there's going to be a child getting murdered here in a minute or something, which...
There's no children involved.
I wouldn't put it past you. Like, I'm waiting for the day where, like, you start out with, like, a super simple case and then it turns into, like, 30 kids getting murdered or something.
I'm going to find one now.
I know you will. If there's a case out there like that, you will definitely find it. So.
I need suggestions.
No suggestions.
Let me know.
Don't help her out.
So the house had an alarm system on the doors that noted when and what door was open and closed. If we trust the system, we know when Tamla went outside. We know Bridget, one of the guests, left at 1:47 a.m. when the front door opened and closed. At 4:10 a.m., the front door opened and closed again when Marcy left, saying she had to go to work early that morning. The only time the back door opened was when Tamla went onto the balcony at 1:57 a.m. to smoke, and it was never closed. If Tamla had fallen from the balcony, wouldn't someone have heard it? Lee, Tamla's husband, had an independent autopsy done, and the findings weren't vastly different from the one by the GBI, Georgia Bureau of Investigation, but this medical examiner found that Tamla's wrist was actually broken, and that while there were injuries to her head, none of them were actually that substantial. Jose, Jean's boyfriend, also worked for the justice system and knew several of the responding officers. He used his position to access files, and they caught him and lost his job because of his actions. Now, none of the files were changed in any way, just accessed. It's important to note that. It's also suspicious that the cameras of the home security system weren't charged that night. They did have cameras, but they were not charged. So there was no footage of anything happening inside or outside the home, which Jean and Jose claim was just a simple oversight. But additionally, here's the kicker, no photographs were taken during the autopsy. It was finished without a single photo, just the autopsy report. But Tamla's death happened right on the cusp of the Black Lives Matter movement, and this case gained major media traction. Now, Tamla's death is still questioned. Leander, her husband, Tamla's family, and her best friend, Michelle Graves, have been speaking out trying to get it reinvestigated because they fully believe that Tamla was murdered, most likely with a racial motive. But the case is still listed today as an accidental death.
Okay. Let's say the independent medical examiner is correct. That, for me, honestly, eliminates the suspiciousness of this case. The fact that her wrist is broken and not dislocated. Because, like I said, that was the main thing that kind of seemed off to me. Now, we've talked about this before. Like, obviously, it's very possible that it could be racially motivated. But I don't know. I don't really see any kind of evidence of that. I mean, did he suspect somebody at the party for being racist or anything? Or
that's the thing. They barely investigated it. I have read through the witness statements, and for the most part, all of them match up almost to a T. None of them are anything I would consider suspicious, like nothing of the exact same wording, anything along those lines. But the timelines are all about the same. A few people left early due to childcare issues, things like that. But it's almost like everyone just went, whoop, that's an accident. Shoved it under the rug. Off you go. They didn't even look twice at it. I mean, here's my thing. I understand probably dying if you fall from, like, a second-story balcony. There was a railing. I also feel like it's difficult to fall off of a second story balcony with a railing, even if you are drunk.
I don't think so. I mean, that's happened before. Here's why I don't really think it's murder. Because you said that the back door opened at midnight, right? When she went out to smoke a cigarette.
It was like 1:50 or something in the morning.
But then it stayed open for the rest of the night. So if somebody went out there, I mean, obviously she went out, left the door open to smoke a cigarette or whatever. So if somebody else went out there and pushed her off the balcony, don't you think when they came inside, they would shut the door?
I have no idea. They also could have known that it's going to trigger the door alarm.
But unless it's someone who kills a lot, instinctively, you're going to want to place something between you and the person that you just killed. Because what if she's not fully dead and, you know, she starts screaming and everybody hears? You'll want to close the door. Most people's instincts are, you know, as soon as they come in from outside is to, what, close the door. So the fact that the door is left open, I mean, doesn't necessarily prove that nobody did it, but it kind of, for me, it kind of makes it more plausible that it was an accident and not, you know, somebody pushing her off the, what was the official cause of death? I know this is accidental, but
Blunt force trauma.
I mean, falling two stories, landed on your head, and I mean, not really surprising there.
I don't know. I just don't know if that would necessarily kill you.
I don't know. It seems like it's an accident to me. I mean, there's nothing that really points to, you know, it being murder. Now, if someone at the party or whatever, you know, we found out later was, because I'm sure the husband probably talked to these women afterwards.
I would assume he did. I honestly don't know. I've watched so many hours of footage, and I've heard, you know, his story, and I've heard Jean's story, and I've heard all of their different stories, but I haven't heard any of them speak to each other.
Who was Jose?
The homeowner's boyfriend.
And he accessed the police files and got fired?
He was the one who actually checked on her when she was found and called 911, which all he did was touched her leg and was like, well, she's dead.
Well, I mean, she's probably cold at that point.
Yeah, I've listened to the 911 call, and they kept asking him to check if she was breathing, and he was like, nope, she's not.
I don't blame him on that one, honestly. I've felt somebody who, after they died, you know, like at the funeral home and stuff, where they're like ice cold.
I mean, yeah, but it would have been a couple hours. She wouldn't have been ice cold.
No, but she would have definitely been cold by that point. I mean, even, you know, 88 degrees for humans, it kind of feels cold, you know, when you touch someone's skin. Not that I've done it, but it just, I don't know. It's really weird, like, because if you touch something that's 98 degrees, you know, your body temperature, it feels like it's normal temperature, right?
Well, right. And I get that. I do. I'm not saying that he necessarily did anything wrong. It just feels a little bit callous.
But again, you know, like, I don't know how exactly I would react when I saw a dead body, but if I had thought that they were dead, I don't know if I would want to touch them either.
Because, like, they were just standing there like, oh gosh, and she's laying there, and everyone's like, is she breathing? And he's just like, don't think so. Touch. Don't think she's breathing.
I mean, he probably felt her, and she felt cold, so he's like, yep, definitely not breathing. That's my extent of touching her.
And I do understand, especially, I know at one point they asked him if he'd moved any of her body or anything, and I understand that too. For sure, especially because he does work within the justice system and he knows he shouldn't move anything, which is completely understandable. But at the same time, what if she was still alive and you're just like, don't want to touch that?
I just think at that point, she would have been at least a little bit cold. When did this happen?
2018. November.
November?
Early November.
Oh, yeah. So it was probably even colder outside. So she's probably even colder than, you know, just normal.
Yeah. It would have definitely been chilly.
That's not super weird to me. The fact that he looked up the case file. Could be, I think, misconstrued as weird. But also, it could just be that he was generally curious that the police were investigating. I mean, maybe her husband asked him to look it up and see what they had, you know, had in the file. I mean, I don't...
No, he was pretty skeptical from the start.
Well, the husband?
Yeah.
Towards Jose or just the police?
All of them. Yeah. Like, instantly. He knew as soon as they told him that she was dead, he instantly was like, this was not an accident.
There was a kayaker who him and his girlfriend went to kayak. He ended up drowning. It was accidental. I mean, it was just choppy waters, and the kayak wasn't really meant for that. But the mom still blames the girlfriend, or the wife at the girlfriend. I don't remember if they were married. But anyways, because, and it's just, I just remember watching the YouTube video on it, and someone in the comments made a comment about it saying, you know, that the family of the victims always need to find somebody to blame, especially an accidental death. And that's just how the human grief works, is you have to kind of find a reason for everything. And it's a lot easier blaming it on someone else than the fact that, you know, a pure accident.
And I can understand that. I mean, look at the Kendrick Johnson case.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, if you're unfamiliar, he was found dead, more or less upside down in a rolled up gym mat in his high school.
Our second most controversial case.
No joke. And there is a, oh my gosh, it's so incredibly controversial. And not just on our end either. This is just a massively controversial case that has been overturned and overturned. And the poor kid's been autopsied so many times because people, you know, his family needs answers. And I don't know if they'll ever get answers because there's just no way to know.
Well, and the problem is when you don't want the answer, you don't necessarily want the truth. You want what'll make you feel better. And that's the problem. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that's what's happening here or whatever. But I just know that, you know, especially in accidental deaths, when someone's murdered, you have somebody to blame. You know, somebody that took your loved one's life. But in accident, you don't really have anybody to blame. And it's like whenever someone dies of cancer or something, I mean, who's always the first person that gets blamed? If you're religious, you know, it could be God or it could be the doctors, or it's always somebody's fault. It has to be, you know, and I think that's how you just process, but some people get so hung up on that that they can never get out of that. And I think that's just, I think that's the first, or at least should be the first step of grief when someone dies of an accident, is, you know, understanding that it's an accident and you can't really change that. Because just to me, obviously, the fact that the police didn't investigate didn't help very much at all. But at the same time, I mean, maybe they just saw that nothing was there, you know. To me, I probably would think the same thing, that it was, you know, accidental. There's really nothing there to show that it's not.
And I think that's a lot of the problem with this case. Like, as much as I don't like necessarily admitting it, I think it could absolutely be accidental. It's just hard for me to see because, I don't know, maybe I watch too much TV and I read too many books. But to me, falling from a second story is like not that big of a deal.
And that's still 20 feet.
It is. But like, I mean, I guess since she did kind of fall face first, I can see it. But I don't know, maybe I just watch too much TV and I'm like, they'll be fine. They've got, you know, broken ankles. They'll be fine though. And I think I'm a little severed from reality a little bit at that point because I watch too much of that.
I mean, I think it obviously depends on how you fall. I think falling straight on your face or head, you know, I don't think that's going to take a whole lot.
What gets me is, yes, she had a broken vertebrae, but her spine was intact and she had some hematomas and stuff, but like none of her skull was cracked or anything. So it just bothers me that, like, in my head.
Well, you said she had a hematoma.
Yeah.
Brain bleed, which you don't have to crack your skull to get one of those.
That's fair.
I mean, that those are very common in, like, automobile accidents where
that
you stop
sense.
Quickly. And that's why, like, it, to me, everything there kind of is consistent with the fall. Like I said, the only thing that was odd to me was the dislocated wrist. But if the independent medical examiner said no, it was broken, not dislocated, that kind of, you know, is better. At least more consistent with what I would think. To me, there's nothing really there to say that it's anything more than an accident.
It just blows my mind that, like, nobody heard anything. That's weird to me.
I mean, a house full of drunk women, and she was drunk herself, so when you're drunk, your reaction time is significantly
slower.
So, I mean, she just may not have had time to even scream.
No, I think you'd hear that thud on the ground.
I mean, 20 feet away, you may have heard it, but it doesn't mean that you necessarily knew what
it
was.
I mean, you would think. Maybe not.
And then maybe, depends on how far the people were from the door.
That's true. I feel like they were on a different floor.
I would assume they were pretty far, because if she went outside and left the door open, I don't suspect people are going to be very close to that door, with it being cold outside.
And she was also sleeping alone. Compared to everybody else, for whatever reason, she was not sleeping in the same exact places as everybody else.
To me, there's just nothing really there. There's no mention of any bad blood with any of the people that were there. Doesn't seem like there's really anything there besides an accident, but I do agree that the police should have definitely investigated more thoroughly. But them not doing that doesn't necessarily mean that there's anything there to begin with. And I think that's kind of the hard part, is you got to kind of separate the two, because, you know, whether the police investigate or not does not, you know, mean that there was something there or there wasn't.
No, I just think that they needed to do their jobs fully to begin with. And there was public outcry to begin with, because they just kind of took one look at it, call it good. And I do agree that it could absolutely be an accident, and there's just some weird circumstances surrounding it. Some weird ones.
I mean, you know, honestly, like, I'd probably be on the same train if we haven't done so many of these cases already. Sometimes the police just don't do their job. And I don't think it necessarily has to do with the color of their skin. Because, I mean, look at the Ashley Freeman and Laura Bible case. I mean, those cops clearly didn't do their job correctly.
God, no.
And we've talked about so many cases in the past that, you know, of people of all races, and it just, sometimes the cops do a really good job, sometimes they don't. I mean, not saying that there's not a racial factor in this, but just sometimes the police just don't do their job. I mean, it sucks, and it should be better, but, and we definitely should hold those accountable that don't. This just seems like an accident to me. There's nothing that really screams to me that this is murder.
Just weird circumstances all around.
Yeah. And I'm sorry for his loss. And, you know, that really does suck. I mean, I feel for him. I do. But just seems like an accident to me. But I definitely do agree that the cops should have investigated better. And I would like to know what Jose's deal was.
Pridefulness. I have no idea.
Like I said, the touching the body and all, you know, that stuff, I don't blame him for that. I probably would do the same thing, honestly, because I still have nightmares about when my dad died. I touched his arm, and it still gives nightmares. So, I mean, I don't blame him for that, but I'm just curious why he looked at the police file. What does he actually do that he has access to the police files? Because I assume if he was a cop, you would just say that he was a cop.
No, he worked in the court systems.
How did the court system get access to the file?
I can't remember. I think he was a parole officer or something. I can't remember. I looked it up and then I didn't write it down. So don't take that word for word.
So in other words, somebody probably had to give him access to the file. So why didn't they get fired?
No, he had access to it somehow. I don't remember exactly how, but he worked in conjunction with the court system, so I just don't remember exactly how.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if he worked for the court system, he won't have direct access to the police files unless they handed it over to the court system. But since no one was ever taken trial, I don't think that would have been the case. I don't know. Weird. But I don't know. That's the only question that really, to me, is left is, you know, why he did that, which I still think could be completely reasonable. But I don't know.
Racial motive or not, Tamla's death deserves a full investigation, free of corruption and bias. Her family is still actively seeking answers, and we hope one day Tamla can finally be at peace.
At Ritual, Mother's Day is kind of a big deal, and we're celebrating accordingly. Find your ritual. If mom needs a bit of stress relief, digestive support, or is looking to support glowy, smooth skin, do it today with 40% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/podcast. That's ritual.com/podcast for 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.